With support from Owens Funeral Home at the corner of Elm and University in Champaign, locally owned and operated and serving families since 1925, Owens Funeral Home invites you to join them in supporting public radio. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Christie Clinic, with offices in Champaign, Urbana, Rantoul, and Mahomet, providing quality health care to the residents of Central Illinois.
Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. It's our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to welcome back to this program Marianne Fugit. She is an extension educator in consumer and family economics with U of I Extension. And she's been here before on this program to talk with us about keeping your home more comfortable and clean and running smoothly. That's kind of her area of expertise. We have She always jokes about how I've always got some exotic stain removal question to ask her. So that's the kind of thing we do. I mean, we talked a lot about cleaning issues. So people have those kinds of questions. You know, it's how to get your red wine out of your tablecloth or your candle wax or the spot out of your carpet or that kind of thing. But she's also interested in a lot of other kinds of things that have to do with, you know, keeping the home running a little bit more smoothly, planning, and we'll be trying to talk about some of those sorts of things too. But so whatever's on your mind, I know that she would do her best to give you an answer. All you have to do is call us, and that is, the number is 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Thank you very much.
Well, it's good to be here, David.
I do want to mention this new website that you have got, and I think it's, you know, I know that people are really hungry for information that has to do with financial planning, particularly when it comes to trying to make sure that they can achieve whatever their financial goals are. Could be making sure they can send their kids to college, could be buying a home, and for a lot of people, it's obviously all about retirement. And now you have an interactive website that has been set up to help people think about that.
Right. We've put together an interactive website called Plan Well, Retire Well, and it really does a lot of things. It talks to you in various ways, and it's kind of a self-study pace. You can do it at your own pace. You can go in and get information that you want, whether it's related to the time value of money, or if you're like many of us, you think, well, you know, I barely meet today's expenses. How am I going to save for one of those goals you mentioned and or retirement? There's one information in there on some money-saving tips. There's another part that talks about how if you think you don't have a dime, you add up all of those sodas or cups of coffee that you buy and how much in a year's time you would have and how you could contribute that. There's a little checklist that you can do. There's goal setting. There's just a lot of things, and it's real easy to get at. The URL is retirewell, so you can remember that, .uiuc.edu. There's calculators in it. There's just lots of good information in there, and you can go back and forth to it. We do have a login on the first page, and I always say you can put your pet's name in, whatever, and password. But just remember it, because we don't keep track of your logins. But that way, if you do one of those little surveys, then it'll be there the next time for you. You can go back and say, oh, I changed my mind, or there's a net worth thing that you can do and print out. And so in 6 months, if you want to see if your net worth changed or record of your expenses have changed, you can go back in there and you don't have to re-enter your information. You can not save it if you don't want to, but if it's on your computer, we're not tracking it in any way, but that's what the login's for. It's just to help you save your information.
All right. Well, that's something that people might want to consult. We do have a caller here ready to go, and they're in Champaign, so let's talk with them. Line number one. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I have a stain question.
Yes.
I just received a quilt made by my 90-year-old great aunt. It's a white background. It's been in storage for about 14 years, not been used. But it has a few very small brown spots on it. It kind of looks like chocolate or blood stains, but I don't know whether that's just from being in storage, and I don't know how to remove them. The quilt has never been washed. It's a cross-stitch quilt, and I'm very hesitant to do anything with it until I've talked to an expert.
Well, I mean, there are different people who, you know, maybe will do antique quilt restorations and that. I attended a seminar a couple years ago put on by somebody who did restoration. And what her method of recommendation was that if you spot, you spot with lye soap. And that's always not very easily to find, but I did find some down in the Arthur area in several of their stores. So, you know, if you, you know, the bar soap, then she recommended soaking it in, and you do all this in your bathtub.
And you use the whole quilt even though it's only small spots?
Well, you can spot it. You can try spotting it if you want to, and I would do that. And if you're going to do that, then just, you know, spot that area and then put in a, you know, container water and use an enzyme pre-soak such as Axion or Biz. Soak that, and she even, some of soaking recommended even as long as overnight. Now, my general reaction usually is don't soak anything too long. Change the water more frequently so you don't reapply the stain, depending on what it is.
Right.
And then if it comes out, then just clear water, rinse it, you know, and rinse it six or seven times to make sure that it's, because what stains usually sometimes is things that have gotten left in it, you know, and probably when that quilt was put away, no spots showed.
Right.
And then over the time they've aged, you know, and they've shown. If you then still have a stained area, the next recommendation would be to wash it with a soap, not a detergent, a soap. And this person recommended, and while I don't often recommend names, she recommended Orvis, O-R-V-I-S soap. And you can buy that at places where they sell items to wash livestock with.
Oh, really?
Which is, you know, a little different. Like your Farm and Fleets or your Big R's or one of those places, because it's a soap and it does.
Sure.
And if you do that, again, you want to make sure that you really rinse it out. Then if you're doing the whole quilt or anything, or anybody is, again, that rinsing. And then wrapping it in towels to absorb as much moisture as you can, and do that several times. And then laying it flat, like on a sheet or something, to dry. Don't hang dry it, especially if it's all, if the whole quilt is wet, because the, if it is an older quilt, the weight of the you know, fabric, you know, can harm other parts of it as
and
it's
you would,
hanging.
You would not put it in the clothes dryer?
Definitely not put it in the clothes dryer.
Uh-huh.
And I wouldn't put it in the wash machine either. And that's kind of a challenge when you start working with it. But and especially like yours that you said is embroidered, you want to make sure, you know, you don't see any of that colors running together or anything like that.
I have a another quilt that's machine quilted and just out of ginghams, and I put that through the washer and dryer. It seems to do fine there.
But that's probably a newer fabrics, newer quilt.
Yes.
You know, think about, we didn't have washers and dryers when some of those real old quilts were made.
Right. Well, this one's only 14 years old.
Right. And see, that's, that has a different lifespan than an antique quilt would.
Yes. Well, I'm the embroidered one that was is only 14
years old.
Yeah.
You know, you can do it whatever, you know, just making sure the one, I wouldn't probably put it in the dryer, regardless.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the washing machine, you know, depends upon the colors and that sort of thing.
Okay, thanks so much.
All right, thanks for the call. Just generally speaking, if you have an a textile item that's old, and maybe that's a family heirloom or maybe something that you have bought, what's the general guidelines for long-term storage of something like that?
Long-term storage is to not hang it, to fold it, to put it inside of an unbleached muslin or an old cotton sheet that has no starch or anything else that's just been well rinsed out. So that, don't put it in plastic because you have the opportunity to draw moisture, and then that's when problems can occur. They recommend taking those out, you know, and refolding them at least once a year, if not more, so that you have different fold spots in it, so that that's oftentimes where wear occurs as well. But, you know, if you're going to display them, probably, you know, keep them definitely in a place where, you know, sunlight doesn't get to them to cause, you know, change in them, and fold them, refold them even more often than the once a year.
Okay. We have someone else to talk with here in Chicago on our toll-free line 4. Hello.
Hi. I have two cleaning questions. One is about wooden floors and staircases. It just seems like sweeping and doesn't get up the dust. And I've been using Murphy oil soap to mop with, but is there something better? And should the stairs be oiled and the wood floors be oiled? And the same question goes for cast wrought iron railing. Should that be oiled rather than just dusted?
For the wood floors, your Murphy's oil soap that you're working on with and using is very appropriate for that. You may want to follow with just a clear water rinse just to make sure that you're not getting, you know, that. Part of it's going to depend upon the care of the floor also, though, what type of finish that you have on the floor. Most of today's floors have some sort of polyurethane, type of finish on it, maybe called something else, but, you know, maybe called gym floor finish or whatever. And what you're doing probably is all that's needed. If you start, you definitely don't want to put anything else on them if they've got that finish, because it'll just kind of sit on top. And once in a while, the wrong finish will actually pull the finish off. It'll tear and pull that off, kind of, so it'll start peeling off in layers.
So nothing, no lemon oil or anything on the floors?
No. Are they dull? Is that what you're, or are you just kind of concerned about making
just,
sure they're...
I was wondering if that would be somehow easier to dust the floors, because almost it just seems like using a broom doesn't get up dust, really, and it might just be my type of broom, but... in between mopping the floors when the daily sweeping, to me, I just feel like I'm not getting all the dust.
Well, the old-fashioned dust mop sometimes will work, especially in corners from that standpoint. Or I know people who have stairs and that a lot of times like these little handheld vacuums.
Okay.
Or electric brooms or whatever you want to call them, that work real well in small areas. Stairs are always a little bit of a challenge. And so getting in those cracks and crevices, you might either try the dust mop and or a vacuum.
And the wrought iron?
And the wrought iron, just generally dusting, just making sure also if you are using any sort of like the Murphy's oil or anything, you probably want to follow it with a clear water rinse and just a soft cloth to dry it, just so that, again, you're not getting any buildup of anything. The more layers you put on something, sometimes it gets dull.
Okay. I came across a quote, which I think you would appreciate. It might even inspire a book or something, but it's attributed to Lewis Parrish, and he says that if you can organize your kitchen, you can organize your life.
I think that sounds pretty good.
It does, doesn't it?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. Other folks who are listening, if you have questions for Marianne Fugit, you can just pick up the telephone and give us a call. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have that toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. And Marianne is an extension educator in consumer and family economics with the U of I Extension. If you have a wood floor that's relatively new and it does have some kind of sealer on there, some kind of varnish or finish, maybe then you don't have to worry about water getting in there and doing it any damage. But that when you're mopping with Murphy's oil soap, even if you're real good about trying to get as little water on there as possible, you are putting water onto the floor. Is that, particularly with an older floor, if the finish is not in real great shape, is that likely to be an issue?
Well, if you get a little water on it, it's probably going to evaporate and not hurt it. If you're over-soaking it long-term and raising the grain of the wood, yes, it's probably going to hurt it. I think in the past, people used to say you never put water on a wood floor, and mm-hmm. I think that was true before we have the finishes that we have today. But I always say, use, well-wrung out cloth or mop or something, and that's going to pick up the dirt, the dust and so forth that's there. but it's not going to harm your floor. If you spill buckets of water on it, yes, that's going to take time to soak in and can hurt it. If the finishes get really worn, then it can be going into the wood, and it's going to raise that grain of the wood, and after a while can cause damage to the flooring.
Yeah. One of the things that has happened to us in our kitchen is that some of the fronts of the cabinets, particularly around where the sink is, over time they've gotten water splashed on them. Maybe I'm just a messy guy.
Well, I think, you must be working in the kitchen. A lot of people don't have that problem because they don't do anything in the kitchen.
I kind of wonder what to do about that, both in the short term and then, because I think actually what I was thinking about doing is some of them are so bad that I'm thinking maybe I'm just going to have to sand them down and re-stain them and touch that back up so they look nice again. But once I get that done, then I'm wondering, well, okay, what should I put on there? Should I put wax on it? Should I just put on, you know, some kind of finish? What can I do to try and prevent that from happening in the future?
Well, if you put a finish on, again, you know, after the stain, you know, if you put one of, like you would on the floor or something like that, that's going to help to seal that in.
Mm-hmm.
There's different levels of finish. Some of them are more shiny than others, so you just have to kind of decide what they're and what's available to you. You can wax them. You can use like several thin coats of paste wax. What you need to remember, and that's what we used to do with floors, is over a period of time, that needs to be reapplied. And so if it was my kitchen, I'd probably look for a finish that is a little more durable, that I can wipe off easier. If it does get wet, then hopefully wipe it off before it has a chance to completely, you know, go into, and it's going to protect that wood probably long-term better, especially in a water area, than the wax would. But yeah, the wax is better than not doing anything.
That's maybe one of those things that you don't really think that much about day to day, at least mm-hmm. I don't, because you do it, you cook, you wash dishes, you're going to get water mm-hmm. around. And one of the things that I'm sure a lot of people habitually do is they wipe off their countertops and they try to mop up any stuff that's there and then kind of wipe mm-hmm. around the sink. But they don't, at least I don't think very much about the fronts of the cabinets. And would it be a good idea just periodically just do that same
right.
thing?
And again, you could use that Murphy's oil soap or something like that, clean them off. That's where if you use a furniture cream or something like when you do on your good furniture, you could even put those on your wood cabinets too. But don't do that, you know, every day. Do mm-hmm. it, you know, on a periodic basis. But definitely wiping them off is a good. It gets rid of any of those residues that's there. Helps kind of definitely extend the life of the cabinets.
Well, we're here up for your questions. If you have something that has to do with you know, some of the things we've been talking about here so far, things that keep the home moving, cleaning issues, organizational issues, budgeting, financial planning, those kinds of things. I know Marianne deals with all of those sorts of things. And so you can give us a call, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. If you do, a lot of people now do have floors that are no wax. I guess we've really gotten away from waxing.
Right.
There's some sort of finish on them to keep it looking shiny. And I'm sure that the manufacturers of the floors have recommendations about how you want to clean
right.
them. But it still seems to me like that some of those can, over time, they're going to lose that shininess. What do they recommend for maintaining that, trying to maintain the look of it?
Okay. Most of them, again, first of all, if you do get a new floor, always ask, you know, to have the directions given to you of how you're supposed to care for it and what product you're supposed to use on it. Because certain floor finishes, whether it's not wax, they have a floor finish that it's compatible to the type of finish they put on that floor to make it shiny that you can use. Or certain items will strip that finish off and other items will not that are cleaning product. Be kind to the next person in line if you're going to sell your house. You know, kind of keep a folder of all those types of things and pass it on, because I think that's sometimes it's frustrating too to people. Clear water is always a good start. A little bit of detergent in it versus another product from that standpoint. Then go to some of the flooring places, and they will actually sell a finish. It's not a wax that you can reapply to like a vinyl flooring that will help to give that. What happens over a period of years is, again, just with your feet and everything else, just like you were talking about your cupboards, some of that wears off and you need to reapply it. And that's usually what's recommended. Certain items will strip it. We used to, when we waxed our floors, we'd, you know, do a stripping with ammonia and some of that. And that's not recommended unless it's recommended by the manufacturer today.
Mm. Okay. Let's go to line number one again for a caller in Champaign. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I have a question. I had a hair dryer, and the hair dryer stopped working. So I set the hair dryer down on the bathroom vanity. Went to work, and I guess the hairdryer cooled off and started. Well, it dropped into the sink, and it's a cultured marble sink. Well, the hairdryer was so hot, it like scorched the sink. Is there anything to take this scorch mark off?
I'm not aware that there is, because it's probably burnt into it. You might double check with one of the local building places, you know, just to make sure that they don't have anything. If it's the cultured marble, I don't think those are sand, that you can sand those down like some of the other countertop finishes and so forth today that can be refinished from that aspect. You probably, you know, like you said, it cooled down, the reset button hadn't popped. And so, that's again, it scorch marks, actually burn marks. And on something like that, I'm not aware of anything. Somebody else may be and could call us, but, I'm not aware of anything that's going to take that out for you.
Okay.
You know, kind of a hard lesson learned, I suppose, that, you know, that's one of the reasons we always try to recommend to people that they unplug appliances when they're not there.
Right.
And, you know, I bet you unplug your hairdryer when you leave now.
Oh, yeah.
And you probably did much most often before, but just didn't think about it now because it didn't work.
So. Right. Okay, well, thank you.
You're
all
welcome.
Right, thank you. We have someone asking a question off the air, and I think that I've got the question, and if not, you know, they can call back and ask some follow-up here. But they're interested in, you're talking about making comparisons between a conventional oven, mm-hmm. you know, the large floor-standing model that we have, and I guess they're thinking about one that's gas, and the kind of small ovens that will now sit on your countertop. And I guess that's, in my day, we called them toaster ovens, and maybe they still do, but some of them are pretty sophisticated, and yet you can actually do a lot of cooking in them, more than just make toast. There are some of those that are made
right.
where you could put a chicken in there,
right.
or certainly you could bake potatoes, or, you know, that kind of stuff.
And we're talking about conventional, not convection.
I don't know. I think so.
Okay.
And I guess, and I'm not sure if they're thinking about, let's say, energy used, how efficiently. I can imagine someone thinking, well, okay, so I just want to bake a couple of potatoes. So I've got my regular oven. I've got this big oven. I'm going to heat up that whole big box just to do two potatoes. Or I have this little thing that sits on top of the counter, which is probably electric. I'm sure
right.
it'd be electric. And you're thinking, well, does it make more sense for me to use that and maybe to do some other things instead of this big oven, which is really bigger than I need to do that particular job?
Let's compare electric to electric initially here so that we don't get everybody completely confused.
Okay.
The big electric oven is going to operate off of 220, and the small toaster, small portable oven is going to operate off of 110. So right there, it's telling you a little bit of that there is an energy difference in use type of thing. Studies in the past have shown that if for short-term use, the small ovens definitely save a lot of energy. Because again of that heating that whole cavity of the bigger oven up, the 220, just the whole combination of everything that occurs in that preheat cycle and getting it up to temperature. Long term, because of heat loss and so forth, if you're going to run it for hours, you get closer to not having as much difference in energy use, because that little oven is going to have to keep heating and heating and heating because it has basically no insulation or anything in it from that standpoint. You use the example of baking a potato. Probably in that, and I don't have any of those figures, and it's been a little while since I've looked at those, you're going to still save energy by using the smaller oven than the big one. And that's why we always talk about using your oven for more than one purpose, putting a whole meal in it, doing something like that. A lot of our bigger ovens today are insulated quite well because they are self-cleaning and it requires a lot more insulation and everything. So once they heat up, that cycle doesn't cycle in and out quite as often. In the past, and I think it's still true, even though with our rising energy costs, the gas has been less expensive to operate on a conventional oven than an electric conventional oven. So over a period of time, you generally save money by having a gas range or oven. So you kind of have to say, okay, how much am I going to do? If it's going to be, short, periods of time, the small portable oven, toaster oven, whatever, it's going to be to your advantage probably to have one from that standpoint.
Well, since you raised the question of the convection oven, that's something that I'm curious about too, because in great big commercial ovens are convection ovens. They have fans in them that circulates the air, and you want that because if you're going to bake 200 pies, well, you want to make sure that the temperature is the same no matter where you are in the oven. So now for home use, there also you can go to Sears or wherever it is you buy your stove, and you can also buy one that has a convection oven. So that has that same principle. I think generally they are electric. The heat,
you can get them either way.
You can get either way. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, with either gas or electric, and it's the same deal. It has a little fan in there that circulates the air. And I know that some people have said, well, in a big commercial oven, yes, it makes sense to do that. But in a small home oven, you don't really get anything by having the convection because the box is so small, the temperature differences anywhere in the oven just aren't going to be that great. I wonder if you have some.
Well, convection cooks more even than even the radiant heat that we use generally. Mm-hmm. It also you can cook it faster and or at a lower temperature, depending on what it is. But it also depends on the types of foods that you're going to. You mentioned pies. You mentioned another area that a lot of people, if you do a lot of roast or, large pieces of meat cooking and that sort of thing, it browns them better, kind of sears it in and can cook it a little faster or at a lower temperature, usually what is recommended, even as much as 75 degrees lower than you would, instead of putting it at 375, you'd put it at 300 or something like that. The problem is today, most people don't cook that way. It's once every 6 months, that we do that sort of cooking. So it's a little harder, I think, for people to pay the little higher price. If we're just going to put something in for a very short period of time, you're not going to notice much difference between the convection and the regular ovens.
Okay. Marion Fugit is with us. She's Extension Educator at Consumer and Family Economics with U of I Extension. And this is one of those programs we called Household Hints. And we talk about a lot of different things. If you have things that have to do with cleaning, with making the house run smoother, household organization, dealing with clutter, any and all that kind of stuff, it's certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Here's a caller in Chicago, line number 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I'm cleaning brass and copper after you get the nice color back and the luster on it. How do you preserve that? Wax and polish, that wears away in time.
Well, I think it does wear away, and that's why sometimes they lacquer those commercially.
A clear spray lacquer?
Right. Now, it doesn't always work for us to apply it on our own at home because we don't get it kind of sealed in. Mm-hmm. But that's why the lacquer that you buy on some of those come. If it's like as a lamp or what is it that you have?
Well, a lamp and like a door plate where the doorknob is, things like that expose to the weather.
You might try a real thin lacquer coat or something like that on those. Definitely wouldn't recommend it on anything that has what I would call an antique value to
right.
it or anything like that because you may end up, you know, completely ruining it. I don't want you to ruin your door plate either, but the worst that's going to happen is probably it's not going to adhere and it's going to peel off in bits and pieces on that if you don't get a good, you know, adhered well.
Would you have a name brand on the lacquer?
No, I don't. Go to
a good
hardware store, mm-hmm. or you might also check a place that sells antiques but also has refinishing supplies and so forth and see if they have anything.
I'll try that then.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Let's go to, I think we have someone on a cell phone on line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Hi.
Yes.
We have a 3,200 square foot house, and it's 9 years old. And I have three questions for you. First is for our tiles, the grout has become black, and so how do you clean that? And I've scrubbed and scrubbed on my hands and knees, and I can't do any better. It's still black. And second question is on the wood outside on the porch, it's also getting disgusting and black, and it's only a nine-year-old house. So what do I do for that? And my third question is. For air conditioning, I've heard that you should leave your air conditioning on all day at a particular temperature and you shouldn't turn it off when you go to work. But then nobody's there. I wonder if they're just wasting energy because it's a 3,200 square foot house.
Okay. I'll start kind of work my way back here.
Okay.
The air conditioning, yes, you are advised to leave it on.
Okay.
But instead of leaving it maybe at the comfort temperature that you have it during the time when you're there, turn it up 5 to 6 degrees.
Okay.
What they say is that it takes more energy to recool it down and pull the humidity out than it does to leave it on. So, and just another comment that if you have ceiling fans, many times you can up the temperature several degrees and turn those ceiling fans on and use less energy when you're there from a comfort standpoint.
Okay, and should we leave the ceiling fans on high or low, or does it matter?
Well, I would only have them on when I'm there. You know, because
that's
more for your comfort than the temperature. The temperature doesn't actually lower with those ceiling fans, but we feel better when they're on. I mean, I know that I can have my thermostat set up 2 to 4 degrees more than I would really feel comfortable with if I'm in the room where the ceiling fan's on. So, you know, from that aspect. If you have draperies, window treatments that you can close the windows or close those during the day, in particular the areas where the sun comes in, going around and closing those of a morning, especially this real hot weather, and turning your air up will also save you some energy. But definitely don't turn the air off.
Okay.
A lot of people will also, you know, think, oh, it's cool at night, I'll open up the windows. Well, what happens is they also let a lot of humidity in, and that air conditioner has to work that much harder when we turn it back on to remove all of that. Okay?
Okay.
Now, your wood on your deck or porch area that's turned black, I don't know what type of wood it is. Do you know?
It's, you know, in the new houses on the outside, you just have like a wooden porch.
Yeah.
But I mean, obviously it's concrete on the ground, but then it's just a wooden design and it's white color. So when you see black on it, you can really see it. And so I don't know how to clean it. And
It may just, you know, putting a little bit of bleach water in and scrubbing it down periodically. You may be getting a little mold mildew growth or a little algae growth that sometimes is it where the sun hits it or not?
Yeah, it's the front of the house. It's the north side of the house.
Yeah, so you may, you know, depending, I might try that first to see, you know, if that would take. There are certain woods, the reason I asked too, that are made to kind of gray with age, and that's the patina and look of the wood. So I wanted to make sure that's not what's occurring.
I think this is painted, actually. I'm not sure what that actually is, but I think it's painted.
Right. So that's might be something that you want to think about from that standpoint.
Okay.
As far as the black grout goes,
yeah.
Is that on the bathroom flooring?
Kitchen and bathroom.
Okay.
And I scrub with my hands, and I can't.
Yeah,
I can't do
there
it.
Are products out now. Even you know, basically what they are is contain a little bit of chlorine bleach in them to kind of bleach them out. But what I'm wondering is, it could be that they were never really sealed. There's a sealant that you can put in that to help so that it's not does not absorb all of that. And if you can ever get them clean, you may want to check and see if there's a sealant that you can put out over that, or you can, you know, regrout a little bit and then do that so that that grout does not, what it's doing is it's absorbing everything over a period of time, and that you're getting that buildup.
So what do I do then in the first step to clean that grout? What, in terms of the product, I never know what I'm supposed to buy.
I would use a chlorine bleach based solution, whether it's you put chlorine bleach in water, whether there's products, you know, and again, I don't like to mention lots of brand names, but Tilex, there's several, Clorox has several, you know, different products that are, and look for a grout cleaner. And again, if you go to a good hardware store, many times they will say, okay, we've got this product, this is what it is, versus just, you know, going to a store and trying to look at everything and read yourself. Okay?
So this chlorine bleach, do I use it on the white tiles and the pink and the yellow tiles?
You use it on the grout area in particular.
Yeah, and so I have these different colors. It's okay if I use it.
As long as the tiles are sealed. And again, you use put about a tablespoon per gallon of water. Don't make a real strong solution of it.
Okay.
Okay,
thank you.
You're
all
welcome.
Right, very good. Well, we have moving into about our last 15 minutes here with Mary Ann Fugit. She's an extension educator in consumer and family economics with U of I Extension, and questions are welcome here, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Someone called in, and this sounds like it's almost more of a Hank Spies question, but somebody called in and wanted to know if there was a furniture refinishing product that doesn't contain polyurethane. And I'm sure that the answer is, well, yeah, if you don't have to use a polyurethane varnish.
Correct.
There are different things
that
you can use.
There are different varnishes and so forth out there. And again, it's probably a Hank Spies question. You're right. But again, going to a good hardware store or a place who sells refinishing supplies, and they can help you select what's appropriate for the item that you're doing.
I think the advantage of something like polyurethane is you put it on once. And that's that.
Right.
Some of the other things, the finishes that you might use, I mean, you could use a paste wax, but you have to keep redoing that.
And again, it kind of depends on what you're doing, too. A lot of people who are refinishing antique furniture, something you don't want the poly or anything, many times on those, they just even do an oil, like a tongue oil or something like that finish on it. So you have to know what product, your end result you want, and what you're doing. And so I think going and asking some of those questions is very appropriate.
Yeah, it should be any place they would sell paint or those kinds of things.
Right.
They should be able to, if you find somebody who has some experience, they should be able to help
you.
Right.
And, you know, ask around people who've done it. What have you done? How have you done it?
All right. We go on next to Champagne, and this is line number two. Hello.
Hi. I've got a question. In the polished brass door pulls that you have in your kitchen cabinets and, you know, bathroom cabinets, I'd like to pull those off and clean those. And it's, you know, it's a combination of that, like, white porcelain with the polished brass. Do you have any idea on recommendations on how to clean that?
Is it just more of a buildup of soil, or are you trying to get rid of tarnish? Or
probably the tarnish.
There are commercial brass cleaners out that you may want to use. The other thing that you can use is either lemon juice or vinegar. Sometimes, you know, having a little bit of warm vinegar and a real very, very soft toothbrush or other cleaning brush, and I mentioned very soft because you don't want to scratch it, and that if you got little grooves or something may help you get into that. And then clear water, rinse it really well, and then dry it well before, you know, so that you, once you're finished with that.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping maybe there's something I could dump them in.
My recommendation is, I mean, you might be able to get by with that, but sometimes they're hollow on the inside. Sometimes we end up pitting things. We cause more problems by doing that.
And my other question is, do you have any the new products out by Mr. Clean, like the cleaning eraser, do you have a variety of things that we haven't thought about using them for, or if people commented or made suggestions about things that we, you know, that seems like a really neat product out in the market.
I think people are finding that that works.
What is it made out of? That's what I was kind of curious. Do you have any idea?
No, I don't. I read the label when they first came out, and I've kind of forgotten what all it said it was in it. But I'm sure as we start reading magazines and so forth, we're going to see, you know, some other things. Again, though, I always caution people, read the product label and make sure that you look at the warnings of what they should not be used on. We get in the habit, oh, this worked well for this, I'll use it on this, and we don't even think to read the label, and sometimes products are not compatible with certain items. And so always read those labels, especially do not use parts of it as well as can use parts.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thanks. I have seen the commercials for that particular product, and of course they say that you can use it on anything. Take marks off your floors, take marks off your walls, cleaning appliances, and I guess I'm sure that you're right. You have to be really careful, read the directions, and anytime, you know, in the past you've talked about trying to clean various sorts of things, it doesn't hurt to try and see if you can find a little spot that no
Correct.
One's going to see.
Right.
Just to try it out.
In a conspicuous spot. Very, yeah. Very good point to bring up, because once in a while, a product, you know, will streak or do something different, you know, to because of the finish that's on it, the type of surface it is, whatever. And so trying it out, reading labels. We sometimes also rereading labels. If you have an item that you've used for, you know, 2-3 years and all of a sudden you think something's not quite the same, sometimes they change formulations in these products. And so what works on one thing may not work quite the same way.
Okay, let's go to line number one. And this is someone in Urbana. Hello.
Hi. We're going to be moving to Michigan in the next month or so. And hearing you talk about bathroom tiles and stuff, I'm wondering how easy they are to keep clean. We actually haven't even looked for a house yet, but I'm wondering, are they hard to maintain, and do you recommend staying away from them?
There are people who say, I love my bathroom tile floor, and I wouldn't have anything else, and then there's just the opposite. again, if they're finished correctly and all of that, you shouldn't have any major keeping them clean problems. Yes, over a period of time, you know, but just like what's on the walls, you know, some of that grout kind of, you know, disintegrates a little bit, you know, just a combination of some of that. Water in the area may types, you know, always say, you know, around the Muhammad area here, there's a lot of rust in the water. And so that impacts choices families make over other choices, you know, when it comes to fixtures and all of that. So finding out some of those things in the area may be as important to you as the type too. Number of family members, size of room, all of those can make a difference too.
Okay. My second question, we have indoor-outdoor carpeting on a cement slab in a sun porch and in this house, and I'm wanting to clean it before we show the house. How can I go about doing that?
Is it more what I would consider a fabric look type of product versus a plastic look, a grass look?
It's not a grass look.
Okay.
It's a short loop, very, very short loop.
Okay, you should be able to clean it as you would your other carpets.
Okay, I have a Hoover upright carpet cleaner. Could I use that on it?
I would think so.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And next is line number three, and this is also somebody in Urbana. Hello.
Hi.
Good morning.
I removed some wallpaper, and the walls still feel sticky. Do I need to continue to try and get that off, or can I just paint right over that?
No, you're going to want to get rid of that because it's still probably some of the glue that's there. Again, if you go to a paint wallpaper store, they will have a product that you can wash your walls with and make sure that you've gotten to the final, you know, original painted wall.
Okay, and also there was one spot where there was some mold, and I've applied bleach to that a couple of times, but it's still discolored. Can I just paint over that, or
is the spot getting larger or anything like that after you've applied the bleach? Mm-hmm. Or is it just dark and discolored?
It just is dark and discolored.
Okay. The reason I ask that, if it's continuing to get darker or larger, it means that you still have moisture there and it's, you know, a problem behind where that is. Mm-hmm. You know, otherwise it may have just been a problem beneath the powder. So you should be able to paint over it. You may need to, there are, you know, those Kiehl's products or something like that, paint primer,
yeah.
That you may want to paint over that so it doesn't show through, especially if you're doing a light color paint.
Okay, good. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And next is line number 4, Terre Haute. Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Yes.
Appreciate your show. A question about tile floor.
Yes.
Marble, brand new. Can your guest recommend a product to seal that? Because I know we don't want water getting down into the pores.
I would go to whoever you purchase the marble from and ask what they recommend for that product.
All right. Thank you.
Because they will have things that are compatible with that, and they will know what works best on that.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. And to line number 2 here, this is Urbana. Hello.
Good morning.
Hello.
Yes. Call
them?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I have a question for you. We are getting ready to build a house and are currently living in kind of a temporary housing situation that was on the property that we purchased. It's a trailer with an addition, and it has all kinds of problems. The two aren't attached, and water comes down in between, and also they didn't put a foundation under the addition part, so the water comes up through the floor into a carpeted floor. And my question is, we have a son who's not quite a year old, and he's having real allergy problems due to the mold and mildew and things in the house. And I'm wondering, is there anything we can do? I mean, every time it rains, we have this water problem. Is there anything that we can do to try to decrease the mold and mildew in the house?
Well, I think, first of all, you know, if you can figure out how to, so the water doesn't come in. If the carpet is getting wet and there's a problem, my guess is that there's mold and mildew growing between the carpeting and the flooring. And most likely that carpet needs to come out. Flooring either needs to be treated so that the mold is not there or replaced. And I'm sure if you're building a house, you may want, but again, you know, from the safety sake of your son and so forth, it may be something you want to do, you know, so that definitely I probably would try and keep him out of that area where it does get wet because that's probably contributing to the problem very definitely.
Okay, so really all we can do is remove the entire floor.
Well, at least the carpeting, you know, make sure and see, you know, again, if it's just on the carpet and you can scrub it and get it, cleaned up, you know, then if it's really gone into the subflooring and everything else like that, then that may need to be replaced.
Okay. Well, I think it probably has because they didn't put a foundation. They built the floor directly on the ground.
Probably there's no vapor barrier or anything else, you know. Definitely, I think you're into a Hank Spies question.
Yeah.
You're probably know what the source of the problem is, and if you can first eliminate, you know, so it doesn't rain in, then correct the problem maybe to your advantage.
Is there a way to get at that area?
No, they don't have a crawl space or anything. It's just built directly. It's a very strange situation.
It almost sounds like it was a deck put on and then they put a room on top of the deck or something.
Yeah, that's almost what it is.
Yeah, because that's what we've gotten questions before. When Hank, we have this guy who's on once a month, we talk about home maintenance, and routinely we get questions from people who have moisture problems in their house and that they have crawl spaces. And he says, well, is it down in the crawl spaces, they're just dirt? And they say yes. And the first thing he says is what you ought to get is plastic sheeting and cover over that dirt, put it down on the floor, and lap it up the sides of the crawl space. And he says, "No, that and put a moisture barrier in, and that will do a lot to reduce your moisture problems. But if you can't get at that space, then obviously you can't do that.
Can't do that. Okay. Well, thanks so much for your advice.
Okay. Good luck.
Right, thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Well, we're coming down to the point where we may have a couple of minutes left. There was one thing I was going to ask real quick, because, and I thought about it way back at the beginning when the person had the question about the quilt, and that just was, and also because I know at this time of year, a lot of people do have questions about mildew problems. Mm-hmm. What's your recommendation for sort of long-term storage of those things that you need in the wintertime, blankets, quilts, you know, all those sorts of things, maybe even your heavy sweaters, those sorts of things that are going to be put away in storage, and maybe things like blankets and quilts are in some kind of big chest somewhere at a place where there's not going to be a lot of air circulation, but it's also possible that moisture can get in there and get at them. For those things that are going to be stored at least for half of the year, what's the recommendation?
Well, I mean, we have all these neat plastic tubs around anymore, but they're probably not the best, especially if we're going to store them in any place that has any sort of moisture, you know, area. Something so they can breathe. If you are storing them in a basement area or something like that, you know, in a tub, my recommendation is always to put them on a couple bricks or something so that there is some air circulating around, pull it so it's not tight against the wall, so we have some pulling out. Putting a comforter or whatever in an old pillowcase is probably better than a plastic bag, because it allows that moisture, not, if it does get in, to also escape, you know, from the standpoint where if we put it in plastic, it just kind of tends to collect the moisture that much more.
Well, I think we're at the point we're going to have to stop, and I've sort of, sorry, because I invited somebody to call, and I think that we really don't have time to take the call. I think perhaps we should maybe not wait so long, and we'll have you back. And in the meantime, by the way, if you have internet access, the Extension folks have a website, Consumer and Family Economics website, that has some of the same kind of information that we've been doing.
There's
here this
stain
morning.
Removal section on that and everything. That's really good.
And that's go to www.ace.uiuc.edu. And do a /, and then put in CFE for Consumer Family Economics. And there's a lot of good information there.
Yes.
And also there is a link to the Plan Well, Retire Well website that we talked about right at the beginning of the program.
Right.
Well, thank you very much for being here. We appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.
Mary Ann Fugit is an Extension Educator in Consumer and Family Economics with University of Illinois Extension. Our program, Focus 580, made possible in part by a grant from RE/MAX Realty Associates, currently handling over 30% of the real estate sales transactions in Champaign County. 352-5700. Nobody sells more real estate than RE/MAX, and they encourage you to join them in supporting public broadcasting. The show is also made possible with support from the Art Mart in the Lincoln Square Mall, Urbana. The Art Mart is pleased to support public radio in East Central Illinois. In the next part of Focus, we'll have a health topic for you. We'll be talking about the care of the feet, and our guest will be Dr. Robert Bourne. He is a podiatrist at Carl Clinic in Urbana, so I hope you will stick around. In the meantime, we'll have some news and an update on the markets.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety is proud to underwrite agricultural programming on WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
And with this update on the markets, coming up on 1059, I'm Jay Pierce. Good morning. Things are up as far as wheat and corn are concerned. The nearby soybean contract down, but as you get out to August and November, we see things headed in the other direction. First of all, with the July wheat contract, it's up 6.5 at 339.5. September wheat up 5.25 at 344.75. July corn.